I will just explain to you the very talk here, you see. What is charity, that was the best word to be used for love. Love something is taken for the love of the world. Love or charity is the attribute of the soul or the heart. So the love which is for the world, that is not called love, you see, that is called lust, that is called attachment. People do speak of love, but where is love? They don't know even what love is. The saint has defined it just to give away heart to somebody and to go around heartless. When heart is taken away by somebody, what is left with you? Only such a man can really realize what love is. Outward expression, outward sign of man who loves is he implicit obedience, complete self-surrender. He cherishes what the beloved or the master wants it. He always goes to please the master, not to please himself. It is no business. So what love is, you know, and how this can be had, this is not grown in the field, not, I think, bought from any shop. So this is already innate in your soul, but that can be flared up when you come across somebody who is overflowing with love. So man body, we have got, you see, in which we can dwell that love. Love is already, as I told you, it is innate in our souls. Love requires attachment with somebody. So we have, instead of attaching our soul to ourself, to God, all consciousness, we have attached to the body and outward faculties and the world around. That has been the reason of our coming back again and again to the world. If we have love for Lord, we are already controlling us in the body. Naturally, we will go where God is. We are not to return to the. So love is flared up only in the company of somebody who is already overflowing with love. In a society, he will have infection of love, you see, radiation of love. So who can follow this way? Who can completely surrender his body, mind, and soul, and also the very faith? So, beloved is everything. He will be ready to sacrifice everything for the beloved. Sarman has been a great saint. He was asked, "Well, you have met your master. What have you got with you? What have you got in return?" He says, "This man body, to save the man body, we have to sacrifice everything to save the body, money and attachment. And to save your soul, you will even have to sacrifice your body and all other bodies, so many. And to save your faith, you sacrifice so many lives." He says, "I have given away body, mind, soul, and faith, everything. The very word of the Master is my faith. The very word of the Master is my life. That's the bread of life, the water of life. To complete self-surrender and implicit obedience, that's the outward sign of man who loves. Who can have it? Who does not care for all these things? To him, the word of the Master is the Bible, the Veda, the Quran. After all, these Vedas and Qurans And Bibles, what do they contain? What they have got? These are only given statements of certain such like masters who were one with God, who were God in man. The very words which express or form the subject of our scriptures. So what are our scriptures, you see? The very words which were uttered by the masters who were word made flesh and dwelt amongst us, those very words are recorded in the scripture. If a man, come across somebody who is word made flesh, then his very word is Bible, his very word is Quran, and the Granth are anything. You follow? Who can do all that? Give his body attachments and soul and even everything, you see? It's a man of very brave man, you see? Who is brave at heart. It's not to be just everybody. And outward expression, the outward symbol of one who loves is he has got implicit obedience of the man. If you love me, keep my commandments. This is what Christ said. And all of the masters said. Guru Nanak said, the word uttered by the God in man is the very God, the very Guru. Those who pay obeisance to the body of the master, there's less hope as compared, because what the master utters, you live up to it only, then you will get higher life. And those who pay obedience to the words which he utters, his emancipation is definite and sure and certain. We should just obey or pay respect to the words the master utters. He is sure to go back to the home of his heart. Those who only pay obeisance to the master outwardly and do not live up to what the master says, there's yet time, you see, time factor is necessary. So that's why Christ said, if ye love me, keep my commandments. This is first step. And ultimately we give away outward things, body, mind, soul and everything. So he has got no will of his own, but the will of the master is his will. Just see where we stand actually. You give everything, what remains is God. World, WORLD. You take this L-I-hood from within you, you're God. You take out L from the world, what remains word? And in the beginning was the word was with God, and word was God. This little I-hood, ego, stands in our way to God. When you completely surrender yourself to the God in man, not the body, we have respect for the body of course, then your L is eliminated. I use this God. There's a story of Guru Ram Das, fourth Guru of the six. Masters always test their disciples to see how far they are fit. So he ordered just to raise certain platforms. All disciples started building those platforms as ordered. Then when they were ready, the master said, oh, this is no good, you see, this is not right. Again, throw it away again. Fresh platform to new one. Again they did like that. Where 2, 3, 4, 5 times they did, and they ordered to be just dismantled. Then he said, oh well, this earth are the mud, what you have used, this is not right. Bring from that place and that building. Then he ordered 4, 5 times like that. Then, oh, this place is no good. Just come on to the other place. There you have to build platform. Well, you see, by and by, people left to it. We are disciples. We are not completely surrendered ourselves to the will of the master. We just take it what our mind, intellect appeals, what it appeals to our intellect. Then I think Guru Ram Das says that 72 times the platforms were built and dismantled. All others left, he was the only man remaining. People told me, look here, the master has become old. He is not in his right senses. You see, what is the good of just raising these platforms and dismantling? You leave it. And Guru Ram Das was in tears. He said, master is all wisdom. If his wisdom is not right, what he said, if I am ordered all through life to build these platforms and dismantle them, my lookout is only to obey the orders, without bringing in any idol. You follow me? This means complete self-surrender. Now, step by step, you judge for yourself where you stand. We want to meet God, yes, where He is there. Complete self-surrender, everything. When there is no I and no L, then God is within you. He has not come from outside to enter within you. It is already there. Your I-hood or ego stands in the way. And this ego comes up when you are conscious of the body, or the physical body, or the astral body, or the causal body. When you rise above the physical body, the physical I-hood is eliminated. Then you got the astral I-hood. When you rise above the astral body, you do the astral I-hood. When you rise above causal body, then you will come really understand who you are. Your will is the will of the Lord, and the Lord's will is within you. But all this starts from where? ABC starts from where? To obey the orders of the Master. If He loves me, keep my commandments. What does He say? He said, all right, have your life pure. Qualify anything works from outside, within, rise above body consciousness, rise above physical body, come in contact with the God into expression power with the light and sound principle within you. Then rise above astral body, then rise above causal body, and you'll find that the dark of your consciousness will be absorbed in all consciousness in the world. You'll find I and my Father are one. Then you can rise further into the super conscious state. This is the ultimate goal we have to come to. The ABC starts from complete self-surrender and implicit obedience of the mind. The God in Him, of course. We respect His body because that human pole is blessed at which that power works, is manifest. And the man who is attached to the outward things or the name or fame, you see, how can he take even one step on the way? So this is what is always enjoined by all masters who came in the past. They come here to bring you back to God, but the people don't pay any attention to them, you see. They simply go to molest them sometimes. So this is what we want, you see. If you want to progress on the way back to God, then this is the steps we have to take. First, implicit obedience, what He says. When He rises above body, how will He get you stuck in the physical enjoyments and outward things? You rise up above them. So, this is Prem ka khasa bhai. Dekho hum kahan baithe. Parson kuch aur tha, kal kuch aur tha, aaj kuch Prem bada. Prem ki tareef bhi kya ho sakti? No word can express. Love cannot be defined in words. Can you define love? No. In words, You give some examples to show what is love. And not you can exactly express the very feelings of your heart. What love is? You may feel, other may feel, see, those who are on the way. It is a subject of soul. Already within us, we have to develop it. This was misconnected, I would say, outside. We have to withdraw from outside and attach ourselves to our controlling power within this body. That's all. But it is. I was just speaking about the chastity of life, which is the most important part of the spiritual life. Spirituality cannot dawn, I would say, on a mind which is driven, attracted through the outgoing faculties to the outward enjoyments. Out of the five outgoing faculties, eyes, ears, nose, touch, and taste, three are most powerful. Eyes. Through eyes, lust attacks us. 80%. Through ears, 14%. And through touch, so how to maintain chastity, that's the point. Just control your attention. You see, mind and outgoing faculties derive their power from whom? From us. Your soul. And the outward expression of soul is what? Attention. So if our attention is riveted at the center of the soul in the body, and we may make the best use of the outgoing faculties. For if you look somebody, just because you need not be looking at it, even with your open eyes. Somebody might be relating you long stories of vicious things. You just control your attention. You may not even with your open ears you won't hear. So how to maintain chastity, that's the point. You can avoid, I tell you, hearing also. You can live, but you cannot. How can you know? There are brothers, it's everybody. You look everybody. So we derive effects from outside. And wherever our attention goes, we are affected by the radiation of those with whom you come in touch. If they are pure, they're sorry. If not, you got that radiation. So how to be air conditioned, I would say. There's heat outside, there's cold outside. What should we do? We should have air-conditioned rooms. If you become centered within your own self by withdrawing your attention from outside and from the body below even, then you would like to see through this window, you might see at your will, self-centered. You won't have the effects of others. But as we are given up to outward, through the outgoing faculty, to outward attachment, naturally you receive impressions from outside. So to be pure, you see, this is the ground on which God manifests. That is why Christ said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And he addressed those people who are less yet the dogs. He's just quoting, you see. So, how to be above these things? Tolstoy, Lord, Buddha, Christ, another all saints, masters, they always gave out in their own words this very thing. You must be pure at heart. Unless you be pure in heart, as I told you, just be, if he, out of the abundance of heart a man speaks, what you see, it is already what you got within you. If your thoughts, your within you, you are pure, then naturally whatever will go out of you through mouth or through radiation, that will have the same effect as any wind which comes striking some fire, touching by some, that will be hot. If it comes in touch with the snow, then naturally that will carry cold. Similarly, whatever we speak, whatever we radiate, that carries the effect of our own, what is within us. That is why it is said, man speaks of the abundance of one thought, you see. How to control? Everybody says, be chaste, observe celibacy, thoughts, etc. And for that, the only criterion, I say, I will say, the only specific remedy for that is what? Be self-centered. It is we who give power to the mind. It is we who give power to the outgoing faculty. It is we see is good or bad outside. If we become self-centered, we may make the use of our outgoing faculty, whichever we like. Now we are driven away, attracted by outside things, you see, like anything. So you are self-centered, somebody may touch you. You are not affected. You are air-conditioned. But if you touch those who are not air-conditioned, they will carry effect. So for that, all masters and very strict secularly, don't touch anybody. Don't look into the eyes of others. These are the outward, some precautions, you see, to save you. Just like a tree to be cut, what the branches is, sure no, branches. It is easier to cut the stem. So these are precautions only to cut off branches. But the whole thing will depend on being self-centered. You follow me? What you call here, sotvant. Get your attention centered within you. You are. Outward expression of soul is called attention, or sort. If you become self-centered, you can make use of anything of your outgoing cycle at your own will and pleasure. Now we cannot do that. We are driven like anything. So you are in the world, you see everybody, this and that thing. So only precaution, don't look into the eyes of others, you'll be saved. But still, their main remedy lies there, specific remedy, I would say, by being air-conditioned. Then you may come in touch with anybody, like a man who is just some incantation man. He lives among the snakes, and snakes don't bite him. And the man who has gotten not that power, then any who will pass between the snakes, they will be poisoned. You follow my point, what I want to bring out to you. So being self-centered is the main thing. That will come up in due course by regular devotion of time to the spiritual practice. By hearing the sound, you are cut off from outside. By seeing the light, you are cut off from outside, from the body and the outgoing faculties even. The more you are successful in doing that all at once, my master, some doctor, came to just examine him. He said, yeah, how you say that you are withdrawn from the body? All right, can you examine me if you like? Then he became self-centered. You couldn't examine him. There no, even the blood circulation very slow. So it is attention which gives life to the body, to everything. This we have forgotten. We are engaged in outward practices, you see, which are concerning the outgoing faculties, you may do for hundreds of years. That carry you good acts or bad acts, that will react. But unless you become self-centered, I will again say, you cannot be saved by outward attachment. So main thing, how to be pure. See? Be self-centered. If you want to make use of your eyes, use it, otherwise not. That is, if he is self-centered man, I will say, or he is called a saint. He comes in touch with you, sometimes pats you, sometimes just looks at you mercifully. But that doesn't mean that he is driven by you. He influences others because he is competent. We are influenced by others. That's a bit, you see. That's a vast difference between a saint and other saint. You say, well, he is sitting, he talks to us jolly sometimes. Well, do you mean to say he is attracted by you? Not the least. That allows only to attract others to come on the right way. That's all. So there is vast difference between a man who is self-centered. Self-centeredness comes only, time factor is necessary. See, Rome was not built in a day. Every saint has his past and every sinner in the future. These are the things which we have to grasp and make the best use of it. Be self-centered, and for that you must be regular in your practices. All through day you go with your attention centered within you. And so you can use this and that. I learned this secret from Napoleon's life. I read more than 300 great, great men's life. He is a very self-centered man, I tell you. At night, at about 2 in the morning, he was writing the proceedings of a primary school. Morning was the Waterloo. You see, fight was to take place. You are so self-centered. In the morning, at about 8 o'clock in the morning, he was just walking in the corner. And the minister was there looking, here. What are you after? Sir, it is right at 9 o'clock. Oh, that is at 9 o'clock. It is 8 now. You see how self-centered it is. So I have been reading biographies of many saints. I have read only two subjects, active subjects and biographies. We learn something from every man's life. Man is not made great by learning something in his head, you see. It is something what he has brought out in his own life, you see. You follow my point now? Everybody lays great stress on being chaste. Still with all that we are not chaste. Reason, atmosphere is poison. The people whom we touch, they are poison. So it is better if you get the company of a good self-centered man. If not, then better leave alone, only make the best use of the things. That's all. These things are referred to in the books, not given clearly, cut and dried as I'm just putting before you. You want to be pure? All right. Be self-centered. That's all. The diaries will help you as cutting the branches of a tree. Otherwise, they say when a fruit is fallen from the tree or cut off from the tree, taken off, then what is a fruit cannot remain fresh. It can remain fresh so long as it is kept untouched by the hand of man. If it touches, it cannot have its freshness for a longer time. There is one way out. Keep it in honey. That won't be spoiled. The honey is the love of God, love of the Master. In that can remain safe, quite fresh, otherwise not. Unless the fruit is touched by the hand of man, you see, it cannot remain fresh. The only way to...
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. This morning, our reader is Helen von Alnabruck. Are you there, Helen?
Yes, I am.
Okay, carry on.
Thank you. This morning, I'm going to read from Master's talk of originally printed in March of 1979 in Satsandesh. The title is called Search for Truth. We are neither much concerned with races and religions, nor with any social order. The problem before us is that of God, or of God-men who found God. We are all worshipers of the reality that is one and pervading everywhere. Lovers may be myriads, but the beloved is one. The creeds and faiths may be different, but the objective is one. We are all seekers after God, God of the entire universe, and God of the learned and the unlettered. He has nothing to do with Hinduism, Sikhism, Islam, or Christianity. He is one and only one, and we are his worshipers. Devotion to the Master is a sine qua non on the path Godward. Christ said, I am the vine, and thou art the branches. So long as the branches are embedded in the vine, they are bound to bring forth fruit. It means that the seekers after God must strike their roots in the God-man. Without devotion to the Master, one cannot achieve anything. Guru precedes God. We have not seen God, nor can we see him. He is at a level much higher than that on which we are. He is the subtlest of the subtle and beyond comprehension. So long as we do not rise to his level and become as subtle as he is, we cannot see him. Each one has his own range of vision. Even the atmosphere around us is full of tiny living creatures called microbes, but we cannot see them without the help of a microscope. It is the microscope that changes the level of our vision, and we begin to see them magnified. The first thing for man is to rise to God's level. In the God-man, God is fully manifested. If we become Guru Man, we rise to the level of God and begin to see the power and spirit of God in him. We can neither visualize God nor contemplate him, as he is formless. In the Guru, he assumes a form. Devotion to Guru, then, is devotion to God in him. Guru, in fact, is not the body, but the God power working in and through that body. He is the human pole on which the divine power works and carries on the work of regeneration. This power neither takes birth nor does it die. It eternally remains the same. God cannot speak unless he assumes a human form. Without a human form, how can the formless express himself? Guru is thus the human pole of God and works like a live switch with all the power of the powerhouse behind it. Man is to be the teacher of man. Even to know God, one has to seek the help of a God teacher. In God teacher, or the Guru, the power of God surges in fullness. His eyes are the overflowing cups of divinity. In his presence, one loses all thoughts of himself, of the world here, or of the world hereafter. From this stage begins Gurbhakti, worshipful devotion to the Master. From now on, the disciple lives in and for the Master. St. Paul, when he rose into higher consciousness of Christ's power, said, "It is I. No, not now I, but Christ lives in me." Kawaja Havis, in his own way, speaks of the same thing. "My whole being is so permeated with the love of the Lord that I have now no thought of the self, and my old self has completely disappeared. O Lord, I am thine and thou art mine. I am the body and thou art my very soul. Henceforth, no one can say that we are apart from each other." Elsewhere, this Sufi mystic has said, "Since I am united with my beloved, I have lost all sense of fear. One who has sunk deep into the water of life can have no fear of death. The apostle, when one with Christ, said, 'I can now fearlessly walk through the shadow of the valley of death, for thou art with me.'" It is a question of grafting. Grafting a branch of one tree into another tree. What happens? The fruit of the second tree, while retaining the shape and color of its own, acquires the taste and flavor of the other. This is exactly what happens when the guru power or life impulse of the guru works upon the disciple. While remaining as before, the disciple is now no longer his previous self, for he has been bought with a ransom. To be one with God, one has first to be one with the God-man. This is the easiest way to reach God. It is the Atman in us that has to realize Param Atman. A part is always in search of the whole. We are so constituted that we cannot rest until we rest in Him. The flame of a lighted candle, even if turned upside down, would still rise upwards. A clod of earth, if thrown upward, is sure to come down. This is the law of gravitation. Everything tends to move toward its source. A conscious entity cannot but seek the ocean of all consciousness. So the search for God is something natural in man. Why? Because we are in search of peace and happiness. But unfortunately, our search is in the wrong direction. We try to seek happiness in the world without us. And strange enough, whatever little pleasure we get because of mental concentration, we call it happiness. It is, however, misnomer to call sense pleasures as happiness. When the reality dawns in us, then we realize our mistake. The real happiness lies in us. It is born of love. Love of the self in us and love of the over-self, which too is in us. God is the soul of our soul. Soul is of the same essence as God. There is thus an innate similarity between the two. But for want of real knowledge and lack of competent teachers, we do not understand the exact position. Like a butterfly, we flit from flower to flower in search of honey, or like a musk deer, go in search of musk from place to place. Little do we know that the honey and musk lie at the very center of our being within us. A child takes delight on a playground while an intellectual person revels in his intellect. On the other hand, a young man seeks pleasure in his family. This is how happiness travels from one place to another, but it defies all our attempts to arrive at it. When one gets tired, one tries to search for it everywhere. This is the beginning of wisdom. From without, he turns inwards. God, who is a knower of all hearts, makes some provision for the aspirant. He leads the seeker after truth to someone who has realized truth in himself and is competent to help us, truthward. We have before us a psalm from Guru Ram Dass. Let us see what he has to say. I am smitten by the arrow of God's love. It is a beautiful way of describing one's love for the Lord. Once this love enters into the heart, it gets deeper and deeper with time. It is something quite different from the love for worldly things. Guru Ram Dass in this psalm is giving us a pen picture of his own mind. He had an intense love for God, and it worked like an obsession in him. He now goes on to explain what it meant to him. I am feeling restless for the sight of God, as restless as a thirsty man in need of water. In this couplet, an attempt has been made to describe the nature of longing in him. The great teacher wants to see God face to face. He likens his condition to a person dying for want of water. You can well imagine what a painful state this is. Lovers always pine and wither away in their love for their beloved. God is love. Our soul, which is of the essence of God, is also dyed in the color of love. It is but natural with man to be in love with one thing or another. As at present, we are in love with our body and bodily connections, family and children, friends and relations, wealth and possessions. But all these things, you will realize, are of an impermanent nature. Again, they are changing from moment to moment, and ultimately, they do not abide with us forever. Either we are obliged to leave them, or they leave us in course of time. This being the case, we cannot derive permanent pleasure from them. It is just a transitory affair. Guru Arjan tells us in this context, we are in love with all that is visible, O Lord. How can we love Thee, the Eternal One? Let me say that this is not enough. It is a kind of attachment. We are momentarily carried away by the glitter and glamour of worldly things. We see things superficially. We do not realize that they would not remain with us for any length of time. The pleasures of the world come and go like pictures on a screen. How can we have happiness with passing shadows? Real happiness is a state of the mind. The saints therefore emphasize, if ye are in search of real happiness, take refuge at the feet of the Lord. The power of the Lord is all-pervading and all-permeating. The saints are worshipers of the Supreme Being alone. There is no God but God. They tell us to be worshiper of one God. They come into the world to connect us with God. Their mission is not to establish personal connections with themselves. They are the messiahs or the messengers of God. They bring his message to us. They live in the will of God and have no will of their own. Kabir always prayed, my wish is of no consequence. Whatever is from thee. We may take the writings of any saint. In each one, we find the praises of the Lord. They have nothing to say of themselves. Christ, speaking of himself, said, I do nothing on my own. I do as my Father willeth me to do. They have no sense of I-ness in them. The great teacher has a great anguish in his heart. The wearer knows where the shoe pinches. The seekers after God are ever in a state of crucifixion. Why? One has to rise above the cross of the body, the point of intersection between the physical and the astral worlds in man, the eye focus. The beloved lives far above. How can we reach him? It is a question of inner struggle between the mind and the soul. The soul is keen to reach the oversoul, God. The soul is languishing in love of the Lord. One wants either to go up to God or God to come down to him. There is no third alternative. He wants to see the reality face to face and be absorbed in him. This is the way of love. Amr Khusro, a mystic poet, said, O God, come unto me and dwell in the pupil of my eyes. Let thou see me and I see thee. Let our love play be between us alone. Kabir likewise says, come thou into the chamber of my eyes and rest a while there. I would hide thee with my eyelashes and try to win thee over. This is how the lovers talk. They are bubbling over with love of the Lord. This is the way to be one with God. Spirituality cannot be taught, but may be caught as an infection from one who has it in himself. A little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. It is just like splitting the milk with a pinch of curd. In the company of such a one, we begin to put on some of his color. A certain change is sure to be felt. The atmospheric effect cannot but affect us to a certain extent. The way to God lies through love. Love is a connecting link between the soul and the oversoul. Whatever practices and performances that we do are the means for igniting the fire of love in us. But unfortunately, we engage in them just as a matter of routine. On the physical level, like gymnastics, and those do not bring about an inner change. As they are not of much value to us, it is therefore said, one may for 100 years perform practices and penances and yet be far removed from God. One cannot win God without lighting the flame of love in him. We have to fan the fire of love in us. Without love, we cannot reach God, for he is love. In the fire of love, nothing survives but the beloved. In the Quran, it is said, love is a forest fire that consumes everything but the object of love. Again, love is likened to an eagle, seeing which all the tiny birds fly away to save themselves. Who can stand this terrible ordeal? None but one who has ignited the fire. Guru Gobind Singh's Singh, the 10th Guru, in succession to Nanak, has rightly said, listen ye all with attention. Verily, I tell ye that it is through love that one reaches unto God. Guru Ram Dass, having developed the fire of love in him for the Lord, is now feeling restless, like a thirsty person for water. He then goes on to explain, God alone knows the condition of my mind and the great anguish in me. You would please realize that it is only the beloved who can understand the excruciating pain in the heart of the lover. God is the knower of all hearts, and he can know best who is pining for him. It is only one who has passed through this stage can visualize what it is. I may tell you of the condition of my mind in the year 1911 or 1912. In those days, I had a great inner urge for God. It may be due partly to my past karmas and partly to the present development. While sitting in the office, tears would involuntarily flow from my eyes and spoil the papers before me. I wondered what it could be. In those days, I was under orders of transfer, and my colleagues and home folk thought that I had taken to heart my transfer orders. What could they know the real state of my mind? The mystery of life is the greatest mystery in life. Once this question crops up, one cannot ignore it, however best one may try to do so. It keeps on revolving again and again and presents itself in so many different ways. I had an opportunity to sit beside a dying person. That had a tremendous effect on me. With the purity of life, I had also developed the faculty to read the future. All these came to me in a natural way. But with all these, I could not solve the enigma of life. The sight of the dying one before my very eyes quickened the intensity of my heart. I could feel that there was something which was slipping out of the person, but I could not make out what it was. I had yet no inkling of the life impulse. While it was still surging in me, it was ebbing out of the other. The lady on the deathbed called her friends and relations to meet them before leaving them for good, and in an instant thereafter, she closed her eyes, never to open again. This is how she passed away in my very presence, and I felt bewildered. I was flabbergasted to see the dead body before me. The life in her had gone out, but I still felt that it was working in me. I followed the bier to the cremation ground along with others. While on the way, my eyes inquiringly looked at the bier, but could not make out anything. Even the learned and the wise do not know how to solve this mystery. On reaching the cremation ground, I saw the dead body of an old man being laid on the funeral pyre. Alongside that pyre, we set up another one for the body of the young lady that we had carried on our shoulders. The contrast between the two scenes, the young and the old, deepened the anguish in my heart. Neither the one nor the other could escape the clutches of death. Both were lying lifeless before me. I wanted to know what life was. I tried to find the answer to my problem in the books. The whole night I would go on reading, but the books did not provide me with any solution. All that I could gather from them were veiled references here and there. At some places, I could get tall and loud professions from the sayings of Mahatmas, as recorded in those books, advising one to do this or that. The books would even tell that it was a question of death in life, but how it could be done was the problem. For this, there was no answer in the books. Bookish knowledge cannot give that which one can get from practical experience. It is a question of self-analysis. A real master can give you some experience of the way out. I came to understand the great mystery and its practical aspect only when I came to the lotus feet of my master, Hazur Babasawan Singh Ji Maharaj. So all things work their way and shape themselves where there is an intense longing for something. I alone knew as to why I was shedding those tears in those days. How could others know of it? In the world, we see people weeping and wailing for one thing or another. All these tears are for the things of the world. Very few weep for the other world, the life hereafter. A real seeker after God is always in a state of acute restlessness, and this invariably is a happy augury. The thick and lowering clouds are the harbinger of rain. The fruit trees bring forth buds and flowers before bearing the actual fruit. So this was a condition of the mind of Guru Ram Dass. In a condition like this, one invariably says, O Lord, a moment's separation from Thee prolongs into a life's agony. A night of separation is a terrible hell. The worldly wise weep for the world, but a devotee weeps for the Lord. It is through tears that one reaches God. If one could get Him easily, then who would wear the widow's weeds? It is necessary to give vent to the feelings deeply set in one's heart. It is by copious tears that we can wash down impressions of ages lying in the folds of the mind. Maulana Rumi tells us that a pilgrimage to Kaaba is possible only through the sea route and not by land. So God can only be reached through the pearly tears flowing down one's cheeks. This, then, is the state of Guru Ram Dass. The world does not know what it is, but God knows it all right. He who talks to me of my beloved Lord is next of kin to me. In these memorable words, the Guru has given a beautiful picture of his feelings. Are we not always anxious to hear about one who is near and dear to us? God is the dearest of the dear and the nearest of the near. We are all in search of the near. We are all in search of God and are keen to hear about Him. Where is He? How can He be found? How can He be reconciled to us? Lastly, how can He be won over? God is the sole object of our desire, and for His sake, we should be ready to sacrifice all, including our own self. In love, one expands and feels that he is the richest person on earth, capable of giving away everything for His sake, both himself and his world. We are so keen to hear of Him and His tales, that whosoever speaks of Him endears himself to us. The person may be a total stranger to us, and yet we begin to love him because of the God's tidings that he brings to us. Guru Arjan likewise says, whosoever would take me to my beloved God, I would happily sell myself as a slave to such a one. Why should one be a slave to another for life? For I am so keen to see my beloved face to face. This, then, is a condition of the mind of one who is languishing in his love for the Lord. In such a state of mind, one welcomes any and everybody who can narrate to us the love yarns. The storyteller may be anybody in the world. We are not concerned with his caste or creed, or the social order to which he belongs. We are all tipplers in the divine tavern. We all love divine intoxication. When a number of Biblers can sit together and enjoy, why cannot the devotees of God? It means that we have not yet developed love of God. When God power resides in all of us, why there is love lost amongst us? The first step in spirituality is to realize this fundamental principle. One who understands this basic principle puts on a different color. Ever since I come into the fold of a God-man, I have lost all sense of duality, and none is a stranger unto me. I am now a friend to all, and everyone loves me. This, then, is the single change that one feels in him when he begins to associate with a saint. One begins to love the world because he sees the power of God in everyone without any distinction on the grounds of religion, caste, or creed. This is the first lesson that one gets from Satguru. Satguru is known for his all-embracing love. In his company, all sit together, forming one holy family. This is why Guru Ram Dass considers everybody as his real friend and a close relation. On the other hand, we are all anthropocentric, and we have not yet known that we are brothers and sisters in God. All relationships of the world remain in the world when the soul departs. On the other hand, the Guru knits us into a kind of brotherhood which is everlasting. How? He places a common target before us, the ideal of God realization. When the goal is the same, we have to tread the common path leading unto the goal. Ultimately, we shall all meet in God. Once I questioned my master as to how all the disciples would meet in the end when each one has his own time and measure of advance on the spiritual path. Hazua replied, "We have all to go across the river of life. Some may ferry over by the first boat, and some by the next. Ultimately, the port of disembarkation is the same for all. We shall all meet at that port. It is therefore said, the Guru seeks his own and unites them in true relationship, which is eternally the same." This ends the first part that I'm reading of this talk. Actually, it'll take three parts to finish it. So this will be the end of today's reading. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Helen, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, and I'll do a count. So today we had 64 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this satsang for us. No, please hang up your phone.